reason to believe that he was moonlighting as a psychic.
That's absurd.
He was one of my best postgrads, a true skeptic.
Oh, I'm sorry, but your daughter
convinced ourselves there might be a miracle. Classic denial.
He's trying to tell me who killed him. Frank McLean.
I don't trust anyone else in this world or the next.
So what are you telling me? Crane had Reuben killed in order to silence him?
I can't be seen with you.
Vicky!
Vicky is knocked to the ground by a hooded attacker. She dies. A comfortable living room adorned with crystals and carved painted wooden horses. Justine Skinner taps the back of a tarot deck and lays out the cards on a purple cloth. The first features a body pierced with swords. The next is marked the Wheel of Fortune. At home, Jane Grace stares wistfully out of her living room window. The actors' names appear in white letters on a plain black background. Kevin Whateley. Jane emerges from the house as pretty young Polly Beatty closes the tailgate and the back passenger door of a black Range Rover. Young Joshua is in the back seat. Polly sits up front with Jane, who takes the wheel. They drive away from the well-to-do house. Lawrence Fox. Catherine Dutter sits at a garden table staring sadly at the image of a dark-haired young woman on the display of a laptop. Bespectacled Canon Dutter emerges from the kitchen with two mugs. He hands her a mug and sits next to her. He clocks the picture on the screen, then gives Catherine's knee a reassuring squeeze. Lewis, this story's called Down Among the Fearful. A picture of Vicky's body at the crime scene is paper-clipped to a page in a manila-coloured folder bearing her name. Her body is wheeled into an examination room on a trolley. A charcoal sheet is drawn back, revealing her ashen features. Dr. Laura Hobson turns on a light. She frowns at Vicky's corpse and sighs. Claire Holman, Rebecca Front. Tall, thin, blonde D.S. Hathaway steps out of a coffee shop. He's wearing a surgical collar about his neck. He stops to light up a cigarette. He looks up at the sky and puffs on the fag. He looks to and fro, then sets off up the street. Sanjeev Bhaskar, Beatty Edney, Emily Joyce. Justine turns over a tarot card featuring a man sitting on a throne. The card is marked the Emperor. At home, 50-something Frank McLean studies a laptop. He finds Justine's details, including address and phone number, on the Oxford Psychics website. Dominic Maffam, Tuppence Middleton, Catherine Steadman, Neil Stook. A pair of swans fly across the surface of a river. A thin-faced man in a suit walks along a footpath through a park. Music composed and conducted by Barrington Feelong. A tape machine sits on the table of a police interview room with a two-way mirror. A policeman shows brown-haired, round-faced Professor Andrew Crane into the room and shuts the door on him. Crane takes a seat at the interview room table and wearily runs a hand across his face. Inspired by the Inspector Morse novels of Colin Dexter. Screenplay by Simon Block, Catherine Tregana. D.I. Lewis joins Laura in the exam room. She points to a puncture wound on Vicky's back.
You look in the centre of the bruising, you'll see a tiny hole which may seem familiar.
Same as the one on Reuben Beatty's arm. Someone just banged into her. Next thing she's on the ground. This figure in a hoodie ran off, got away.
Man or woman?
No idea. Quick on their feet, I'll give them that.
Injected, same drug, metorphin.
Hathaway arrives.
I heard you were with her when she died. That's rough, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Metorphin, we've had a result from our inquiries. Garsington Equine Centre reported the theft.
Hathaway goes. Lewis exchanges a look with Laura, then follows. Produced by Chris Burt.
Sleepless night.
I should have stayed with her. When she told me about Crane, she was scared for her life.
Well, don't give yourself a hard time, James. Professor Crane's her boss. He got her into it. See what he's got to say about it.
Directed by Brian Kelly. At home, Justine lays out more cards on the purple cloth. She shoots a look in the direction of the ringing phone. She turns over another card featuring a man and a lion together, marked Strength. She shuts her eyes and meditates. Crane drums his fingers impatiently on the interview room table. He looks across to the two-way mirror and waves. His reflection waves back. On the other side of the glass, Hathaway watches Crane, then turns away. A girl on a white horse makes a jump over a fence in a field. Lewis drives along an adjacent road in his BMW. He watches the girl jump another pair of fences, then turns his attention to the road with a smile. He pulls into a yard surrounded by stables. A smiling 40-something blonde in riding gear approaches as he parks the car and gets out.
Detective Inspector Lewis?
Yeah.
Lucy Soper. This is exciting. Do you like horses, Inspector?
Well, I bet on a winner, yeah.
It's my passion. I eat, breathe and sleep horses. You should come for a trek. The old plodders are quite safe.
Never underestimate a plodder.
I'm sorry to have to bring you in at what must be a very difficult time for you.
Don't be. You have an investigation to conduct. But if you're going to ask me the same questions about Vicky that you've asked me about Reuben, then I'm going to give you the same answer. I have no idea why anybody would want either of them dead.
Could it have something to do with the work you've been offered, Professor?
Work?
For the military. I understand you've been offered a great deal of money to undertake it. And Reuben was jeopardising that by threatening to go public about it. That would give you motive for Reuben's murder and probable cause for Vicky's.
Crane unfolds his arms and looks amused.
Who told you this?
Did Vicky come to see you after Reuben was killed? Did she ask you if you'd killed him or knew anything about his death?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Where were you between the hours of 4 and 5 yesterday afternoon?
That's easy. I was doing my daily jog, and if you want to check that, you can ask the man at the juice bar in the market. I always buy a drink there.
At the stables.
You said on the phone that a small amount of etorphine had disappeared from your stock?
0.25 milligrams, to be exact. I had no idea it was missing until your lot asked us to check. We only use it in emergencies, until the vet can get here.
Whereabouts is it stored?
All our pharmaceuticals are kept in the dispensary. I'll show you. I have no idea who might have taken it. Has someone abducted a horse or something?
Were you approached by the military to design a trial for them?
No, but I do find the idea intriguing, I must say. What sort of trial?
Have you signed the Official Secrets Act?
Let me tell you about Reuben and Vicky. Reuben was the clear-headed one. He was driven, you know, detached. My protege, in fact.
You set up shop as a clairvoyant. He didn't tell you, your protege. He branched out with Vicky. That must have stung.
Crane smiles.
Now, Vicky, the total opposite. She's brilliant, but excitable. The type of person who may well submit to hysterical conspiracy theories to justify the object of her affection's death.
Are you claiming that you didn't approach Vicky to assist you in the trial instead of Reuben?
Had there been any sort of trial, I assure you, I would have favoured Reuben over Vicky.
This cupboard is always locked, and I keep the keys in the office. I'm the only one who can administer it, and always with an antidote to hand. An accidental injection can be fatal for a horse.
For a human being, too.
Gosh, yes. You're not telling me it's been used to kill someone?
2 people, in fact.
That's awful.
How many people have access to the office, Lucy?
Lots of people.
And how often do you do a stock take?
We do one annually. In fact, we're probably due for one round about now. Thanks for the reminder.
I'm going to need a list of all your staff and paying customers.
In the interview room.
I understand your position. You have a great deal to protect, a great deal to be frightened of.
Nothing to be afraid of, because I'm telling the truth.
Reuben Beatty was drugged and then kept alive knowing that he faced certain death. Tortured. Terrorized for information, maybe. Doesn't that bother you, Professor? Takes a lot of effort to keep your hand still, doesn't it? I was watching you earlier through the mirror.
Ah, studying the lab rat, eh? I'm trapped. Don't forget I'm used to sitting where you're sitting.
Deconstructing people.
Helping them cope with the truth. Or failing that. Working out why they're in denial.
Denial of what?
That they aren't part of something greater than themselves. That this is it.
Crane bangs the table eagerly, then leans back in his seat under Hathaway's withering gaze.
You know, we're no different, you and I. Hmm? Here you are, trying to break me down.
Except your subjects aren't criminals or liars.
You've no real evidence, therefore you've no reason to keep me here. It's quite in keeping with the blindness of your faith.
Hathaway stares at him dispassionately.
My little test. Those who don't believe in God readily admit it.
I'm keeping you here because I think Vicky was telling the truth. And you're not.
Then talk to me when you have some proof.
At the stables, Lucy brings Lewis pages of information.
You can tell how busy we've been. And this is without the drop-ins and the holidaymakers.
Thanks. When was the last time you used a Torfin?
Less than a year ago. It was awful. A dressage horse slipped and broke its leg during training for a national competition. It hit the ground and rolled onto its rider, a teenage boy. He was crushed from the waist down. His mother was running the session, a championship rider herself and very ambitious for her children to follow in her footsteps. We suspected she'd been pushing the horse and son too hard.
Into my heart an air that kills, from yon far country blows. What are those blue remembered hills?
A celebrant in a flowery smock conducts a service as Polly joins wheelchair user Josh at the riverbank. Polly takes the lid from a black urn and pours ashes onto the surface of the water. Josh turns and exchanges a look with stony-faced Jane, who's standing a few feet behind him. Polly takes red and white single-stemmed roses from Josh one by one and tosses them into the water. Other mourners join them at the water's edge. A thin-faced man watches from beside a tree, then goes. Polly breaks down. At the stables...
So what happened to the boy?
He's been more or less confined to a wheelchair ever since. The horse had to be put down. Not a good day. Everyone was screaming and panicking.
So, amid all this chaos, your stockroom could have been left unlocked for a time.
Yes, I suppose.
Lewis looks at the info.
Staff. Customers. Volleys?
Volunteers. Can't get enough of them.
A name catches his eye.
Justine Skinner. Thanks, Lucy.
Lewis gets into his car and makes to leave. At headquarters, Hathaway studies a whiteboard of info as Lewis arrives.
Crane's alibi checks out, sir.
What about this work Vicky said he'd taken on, this contract?
And he's holding out on us. He says it's some hysterical fabrication on Vicky's part.
Can't rule that out.
Well, whether she was right or wrong, he was spooked by something.
Unless he was just grieving.
How do you get on?
0.25 milligrams of atorphine stolen from Garsing sometime in the last year. And guess who volunteers there? Justine Skinner, the cat killer.
Wait, you're saying Justine Skinner killed Reuben? Well, she was in his office.
Yeah, but she was right here in custody when Vicky Walmsley died.
Well, maybe she had an accomplice. Maybe one of her clients proved malleable to suggestion.
Whatever. She's our only link between Reuben and the atorphine. So we better keep an eye on her.
At home, 40-something Justine throws a handful of crystals onto her purple cloth. She places a piece of embroidery mounted in a brass frame at the centre. It features flowers and the words, "To Mummy, I love you, love Justine." Justine shuts her eyes in contemplation, which is disturbed by the rap on the door. With a sigh, she irritably marches up to the front door and opens it to Frank.
What do you want?
If you were kosher, darling, you'd know.
He pushes his way inside. Lewis and Hathaway watch CCTV images.
I got Vicky here jogging.
Vicky joins in with other joggers.
That's where I called her name.
The image changes to one of the joggers running along a path beside a building.
There, see, she's on the ground. Whoever did it's gone.
On screen, Vicky collapses and Hathaway kneels at her side.
Stop it there.
The image freezes.
Can you wind that back?
A copper taps at a keyboard and the image goes into fast rewind.
Did it stop it there?
The picture freezes and Lewis points to a figure.
Can you blow that better?
The policeman isolates a square of the image and enlarges a blurred shape.
Anyone make out if they're male or female?
A WPC arrives.
Someone's just called asking to speak to you in connection with the Beatty murder.
Do they have a name?
Joshua Grace. He says he's Polly Beatty's brother.
Lewis and Hathaway exchange glances. Now they walk down a path beside the river, bordered by a metal fence. They turn right and head towards a country pub, a white building with a grey slate roof. Inside, Josh is sitting in his wheelchair near a low table, toying with a drink. Lewis and Hathaway join him.
Joshua, Detective Inspector Lewis. This is my colleague, Detective Sergeant Hathaway.
They both shake his hand.
Is it Joshua or Josh?
Josh.
Josh looks apprehensive.
Don't be nervous. Anything you tell us here is just between us, okay?
What do you want to tell us, Josh?
You know the day Reuben was murdered? In that office?
Yeah. Well, okay, take your time.
Mum went there.
Where?
To Reuben's office in Oriel Street that day. I know, because I was in the car.
What time is this?
After school, about 3:30. I didn't think anything of it. She's always running errands, but... Then Polly told me where Reuben's office was, and...
How did your mum and Reuben get on?
Mum likes to get her own way. She wants her daughter to get a first in psychology or her son to be a championship rider. You don't really have much say. Look what I had to do to get out of it.
Did this happen at Garsing?
Josh nods.
I don't think Mum killed him or anything, but she might know something.
Lewis and Hathaway head back down the path.
Get over to their house and talk to the mother. If she doesn't admit she was in Reuben's office that day, take her fingerprints. We'll compare them with the unidentified one Socko found.
Hathaway drives a silver saloon up the drive to the Grace's home and parks next to a maroon-coloured classic car. He raps on the glass front door. Polly comes down the stairs and opens the door. She's wearing a pale blue flowery dress and a purple cardigan.
Hello, Polly.
Have you found out who did it?
Not yet. Is your mum in?
In the living room...
This is Detective Sergeant Hathaway. He's investigating Reuben's murder.
Oh, do sit down. I hope you've got some news for us.
To Polly...
I think it might be better if I spoke with your mother alone.
This is about Reuben. I've every right to stay.
Darling, why don't you go and check on Sarah?
Polly stays put. Jane and Hathaway sit down.
Mrs. Grace.
Jane, please.
Did you know that Reuben was renting an office on Oriel Street?
Yes. That's where he was killed, right?
Did you know before?
No, of course not.
We have evidence that suggests you did and that you visited him the day he was killed.
What?
I'd advise you at this juncture that withholding information in a murder inquiry is a very serious offence.
Jane looks stunned.
Mum.
Polly stares in astonishment at Jane.
Yes, I did know about the office.
What? He was never at home. I presumed he was having an affair. I followed him one day from the department.
You spied on him?
Someone had to make you see sense. I knew you'd just keep on making excuses
for
him.
You just wanted to get rid of him.
I thought if I could give you a concrete reason...
So why didn't you, Mum?
Oh, believe me, I wanted
to. Why didn't you tell me?
Because I never found him with another woman, all right?
Polly turns away from Jane, then sinks weeping into a chair.
Why did you go to Reuben's office the day he was murdered?
Jane looks vacantly at the floor.
Jane.
She comes out of her reverie and takes her seat.
To talk to him. To confront him. He told me he was doing some counselling on the side. Asked me not to tell Polly. I said I didn't trust him. And I offered him money to divorce her.
He did what?
He said he didn't care whether I trusted him or not. He told me he loved Polly. He was hoping to surprise her with a deposit for a proper family home. For her and Sarah. I didn't tell you before because the next thing Reuben was dead. I knew how it would look.
Polly puts a hand over her mouth and hurries from the room. Hathaway gets up.
This is a serious offence. You were the last person to see Reuben alive and you didn't come forward.
I didn't kill him.
Jane frowns up at Hathaway.
Joshua told you, didn't he?
Hathaway stares at her impassively. She rolls her eyes and stares out of the living room window. Hathaway joins Polly by a rosebush in the garden.
You all right?
Yeah. In a way, Mum's done me a favour. At least now I know he did love me. I can't shake the idea of him and Vicky having an affair.
They weren't.
Polly brightens and looks up at him.
Maybe I should talk to her.
You can't. She was murdered yesterday. You being convinced that they were having an affair gives you a motive.
You can't think I killed them. No. I was angry with both of them, yes, but only because I didn't want to lose him. I love him more than anything. I could never... He's the father of my child.
Have you told us everything you know?
Yes.
She looks thoughtful.
Except...
She hurries into the house as Hathaway gets a mobile call.
Yeah.
Justine's not picking up, so I'm going round there. Want to know what happened to that Ator fiend from the Galsington Riding School.
What did Josh's mother have to say?
She admits going to see Reuben, she denies killing him, she had motive, she had opportunity, but no reason to kill Vicky.
Polly comes back with a book.
I'll call you back.
I was looking for answers. I couldn't make any sense of it.
Hathaway undoes the ties around the leather book and flicks through the pages of handwritten notes featuring dates and initials.
I'm going to need to take this.
Polly nods and Hathaway leaves. Lewis makes a left into Justine's Road and pulls up behind an ambulance outside her house. Inside, paramedics are tending to Justine, who's lying on the living room floor, her forehead and lips stained with blood, her bohemian furniture in disarray.
God, no. Justine? Justine, who did this to you?
Frank McClay.
Lewis stares at her grimly.
Frank McLean, the guy she reckons killed Reuben.
As a result, some message from beyond the grave.
Yeah. But she did warn us that there was a woman in trouble.
Yeah, who, Vicky Walmsley or herself?
Well, the afterlife's obviously a bit vague on the specifics. So we've certainly got enough to go after McLean for assault.
Well, that's not all we've got, sir.
What the hell does all this mean?
Well, according to Vicky, Reuben did his psychic hearings on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so... These are his client's initials and the order of the appointments. How many times did Justine Skinner visit him?
Just the one.
And he died on a Tuesday. Well, he's booked up for most of the next few weeks, so there should be a JS in here somewhere. Our clients became regulars. He must have been good.
I never realised so many people fell for this kind of thing.
Grief makes people irrational.
Can't blame them for that, I suppose.
You can blame the parasites that feed off them.
It would come as a hell of a blow to find out that this was some sort of giant scam.
Maybe someone did.
Hathaway points to a page in the book.
There she is, Justine Skinner and FM.
Frank McLean. He was booked at 3, says he left early.
KDSS, Susan Smith, who found Reuben's body.
Lewis. Ah, right. Thanks.
So KD was due in after she left.
We have McLean in custody.
Frank sits on a bench in a police cell, his hands cupped under his nose. His knuckles are grazed. Lewis and Hathaway are let into the cell.
Hello, Frank.
Would you please do me the courtesy of explaining why I'm here?
Maybe you do me the courtesy of explaining how you got those grazes on your hand.
Justine Skinner is in hospital. When you left her for dead...
Oh, please.
..she blacked out. If she hadn't been able to reach her phone...
An hour later.
..she'd probably still be lying there now.
Well, I am sorry about that, but it's no dear me.
I got you so wrong. I thought, here's a man that wouldn't kill somebody when he can break them down with words. Never had you down as a coward who would beat up a defenseless woman.
Frank stands up.
When I saw you, I thought, now here's a man that won't present any great challenge with his simple questions and his dumb open face. And I wanted to find out who'd incriminated me, so I fired some names. And you reacted to Justine Skinner. I cold read you in a heartbeat. Shouldn't we say lax, Inspector?
A psychic and his colleague have been murdered, and now another psychic has been viciously attacked. Forensics are crawling over our home as we speak.
Frank's hard expression softens.
I only meant to scare her.
She's a vulnerable woman. You violated the sanctuary of her home.
She set me up. She said she'd seen a vision of me in that dead bloke's office. All because I'd written on my blog that she was a disturbed cat murdering spinster. So I confronted her and she came at me and I pushed her away. And that was all.
Lewis glares at Frank.
Can you read my face now, Frank?
Lewis and Hathaway are let out of the cell block.
I've never known a man of so much arrogance and self-belief.
Not anymore, he's a mess. What you said before about what if Reuben's clients found out he's a phony, that whatever got them through their pain was a lie.
I imagine they'd feel broken.
Wouldn't Professor Crane's subjects feel the same? Crane says that he wants to work out why people believe in the paranormal, but he's also desperate to prove that any faith, including religion, is pernicious because it affects people's ability to think rationally. He wants to push his subjects to the limits of their beliefs. Maybe he pushed one of them too far.
Vicky and Reuben conducted his experiment. Maybe one of their subjects wanted revenge.
The thin-faced man.
Who's that?
Innocent glowers.
Mom?
Professor Crane is out of bounds.
What?
Crane is out of bounds.
Says who?
Doesn't matter who.
But, Mom, we need to get into his research files.
You think he's involved?
Well, we haven't ruled out the idea that he might have killed Reuben and Vicky to protect some potentially lucrative source of income. But there's also a second line of inquiry we'd like to pursue with him.
In that case, I'll rephrase. Professor Crane is going to be out of bounds.
As of when?
First thing tomorrow morning.
And you really can't tell us why or who gave you the instruction?
You've got 10 hours. I wouldn't waste your time trying to get anything out of me.
Scowling, Innocent takes a seat behind her desk as Lewis and Hathaway leave. In his office, Crane sits staring at a computer screen, thoughtfully rubbing his chin. He rubs his forehead, then stands up and steps into an outer office as Lewis and Hathaway arrive.
This is borderline harassment.
Your alibi checks out.
Then what are you doing here?
Why are you so jumpy, Professor?
Is it because your colleagues have been murdered and you don't want to be next? Don't you care what happened to Reuben and Vicky?
What good would that do?
She was running for her life. Didn't know if she was safe at home, in the lab, in a crowd.
I'm not big on sentiment. They weren't like children to me, but I was very fond of them. And I am so bitterly sorry that I ever got them involved in this sleep deprivation experiment. But please, I cannot disclose any details about my employers.
That's not why we're here. How do you select subjects for your experiments, Professor?
We mainly use adverts in the local press, or the Oxford Journals, or the department's website.
Is there a specific type of individual you look for?
It varies from one experiment to the next. But why are you now interested in the subjects?
We think it's possible one of them killed your students.
Crane leads them to a study.
We're looking for someone with the initials KD.
Right, well, the details will be in here somewhere.
Crane pushes open a wooden door. A golden glow in the Oxford skies at sunset. A light gleams at the window of a gabled room in a college building. The college cloisters are illuminated by hanging lamps. In their shirt sleeves, Lewis and Hathaway look through Crane's paperwork.
So how does this work? People tell you what they believe and you disprove it?
Yeah, we question it. We counter their beliefs with logic. We try and understand why they hold on to such views, despite all the evidence to the contrary. They come to us voluntarily. They know exactly what to expect. If we break them down, then their conviction must have been shaky in the first place. So.
Of course, it has nothing to do with you browbeating them into submission.
This last list of volunteers is 3 months ago. There's no one with the initials KD.
The last investigation was a few weeks ago. Vicky led it under my supervision, and Reuben assisted. Here it is.
Crane hands Hathaway a folder containing a list of names.
An investigation into the mechanism upholding spiritual conviction. Sir.
What is it?
I think I know who killed Vicky and Reuben.
On the page are the initials KD with K Dutter next to them. Morning. A milk float bounces along a suburban road. Lewis and Hathaway join armed cops in protective gear as they hurry up to the Dutter's front door. Cannon opens the door and looks shocked.
Kneel down! No!
Down!
What's going on?
Alan Dutter, arresting you on suspicion of the murders of Reuben Beattie and Vicky Walmsley. Who else is in the house?
No one. My wife goes swimming at this time.
Right, get him down the station.
But I haven't done anything wrong.
To Hathaway.
Search the place thoroughly. Any evidence of the torture?
Cannon is cuffed and led away by the cops. Lewis goes with them.
I'm placing a photograph of Reuben Beattie in front of Cannon Dutter. Do you recognise this man?
Yes. From the news.
Reuben Beattie was sedated with barbiturates and
then fatally injected with etorphine. You came to see me about it, likened it to euthanasia. Though to me, it sounded more like torture.
You're familiar with barbiturates, Mr. Dutton.
I give Catherine, my wife, a barbiturate-based pharmaceutical to help her sleep.
But you also had access to etorphine, didn't you, when you and Catherine worked as conservationists in Angola?
Yes, but I don't know I'm here. Why do you think I did this?
Hathaway looks around as uniformed cops search the Dutter's smartly furnished home. In the police interview room...
Did you volunteer for an experiment at the Department of Psychology 3 weeks ago to examine the resilience of spiritual belief when challenged by a sustained attack of logic and reason?
Yes, why?
I'm placing a second photograph in front of Cannon Dutter. Do you recognize this woman?
A photo of Vicky's corpse.
Not sure.
Vicky Walmsley led the experiment, assisted by Reuben Beattie. Sat opposite you, persistently challenged your spiritual beliefs.
Cannon frowns.
That can't have been easy.
Lewis produces a photo of Crane.
Professor Andrew Crane oversees the experiments for the university's Department of Psychology. You just said you volunteered, Mr. Dutton. And yet you don't seem sure that you met any of the people involved.
Cannon laces his fingers nervously.
Reuben Beattie was also a practicing psychic under the name of Randolph James. His appointment book tells us that you visited him regularly for the past 3 months. Your last appointment was on the day he was murdered. So why are you pretending you never met him?
Cannon's eyes fill with tears.
I was ashamed.
At the Dutter home, Hathaway closes a floor-level kitchen cupboard door. He picks up a pile of post on a breakfast bar and looks through the selection of envelopes. One is addressed to Kay Dutter in type. The next envelope is handwritten and addressed to Catherine Dutter. He looks thoughtful and compares the two.
When Joe died, I wanted to stay strong for my wife. But the grief was eating me away.
So you went to see a psychic?
Cannon stares tearfully at Lewis and swallows hard.
Yes. He brought her back. Just like she used to be.
Lewis takes his mobile from the pocket of his grey suit jacket and steps out of the interview room.
Found anything?
The wife's name is Catherine Dutter with a K.
Dutter's covering for her. She was at the lab. She was a volunteer for Crane's experiment, and that's where she saw Reuben and Vicky.
And Crane. We just found the Atorfin.
Get over to his place.
A cop hands Hathaway a small bottle. Crane does a leg stretch in jogging gear and puts in a pair of earphones. In the interview room...
Catherine with a K. The initials in Reuben's appointments book are KD. Where is she? Where's your wife, Mr. Dutter?
Let me speak to her.
She isn't home yet. A man's life could be at stake. Stop trying to protect her.
She lost her daughter. You have no idea how close they were.
Crane jogs out of his home and onto the street, passing a man walking a black Labrador. At headquarters, Lewis glares at Cannon.
When Joe died, Catherine looked for her everywhere. Wanted to talk to her. She said the psychic helped. She wasn't living in the real world. All that seemed to matter to her were those sessions with Randolph James. I was losing her to our dead daughter. I signed up for the experiment to prove to myself that Joe was gone. But I wasn't the one that needed convincing. So I sent Catherine in my place. But in Crane's lab, she saw a psychic. He wasn't called Randolph. He was Reuben, postgraduate, cold, detached, self-absorbed. She hasn't been right since. Whatever she's done, it's down to me.
Lewis goes. Crane runs along the alleyways and byways of the ancient college streets. Catherine pulls up at a curb in a red Ford. She gets out, then jogs after Crane. She's wearing the blue hoodie and a baseball cap. Lewis drives through Oxford. He's on the phone to Hathaway at Crane's place.
Any sign of Crane?
Not here. Neighbour saw him set off for a run about 15 minutes ago.
Oh, he could be anywhere.
Hathaway frowns.
Said he always stops in at the market when he goes for a jog.
Meet me down there.
Crane puffs into the covered market and turns a corner by a stall, a sheen of sweat on his forehead. Catherine follows and stops at the corner, looking up and down the aisles that crisscross the covered market. Hathaway hares into the covered market. Lewis pulls up in a parking bay on the narrow street outside. Hathaway runs up to a salad stall.
You see a short guy, Oxford professor, comes in here and has a drink every day.
The stall holder shakes her head. Lewis runs into the market. Crane walks past a butcher's shop. Hathaway leaves the salad stall. Catherine runs down a market aisle with a determined look on her face. She reaches a flower stall at the corner of a block, stops, looks around, then moves off. Lewis rounds a corner and calls Hathaway.
See ya, man.
Nothing.
Crane walks down an aisle. Hathaway breaks into a run. Lewis looks about desperately. Catherine spots Crane as he crosses her path. She turns a corner and runs down the aisle after him, taking a needle and syringe from her hoodie pocket. Lewis appears in front of Crane and holds up a warning hand.
Professor Crane! Professor!
Hathaway tackles Catherine.
Out!
Hathaway and Catherine struggle amongst bunches of flowers outside the flower stall. She jams the syringe into his surgical collar before Lewis drags her off.
Are you all right? Hathaway, man, talk to me, please!
Hathaway rips off the collar and ruefully rubs his neck.
She got the brace.
Hathaway heaves a sigh.
Oh, God.
He flings the collar away in relief. Later, on the street outside, Catherine is escorted to a police squad car and is gently pushed into the back seat by a uniformed WPC. Lewis leans over her, one arm resting on the rim of the open car door.
Where did you get the atorphine?
Catherine.
We used it on elephants in Angola. I smuggled it in, ready for when Joe died, so I could join her. But I was too scared. In case Joe wasn't there and it all just went black.
Is that when you went to see a psychic?
She glances at him.
I must have been a walkover, because I couldn't stop talking about her. But it didn't matter. It was good. It was like she was in the room. Told me she was healthy, having fun, missing me. Cannon wanted me to do the spiritual conviction experiment. I thought I could stay strong. But it was in a sterile lab, and this girl was grilling me, mocking me, while her boss looked on, observing me like a rabbit in a cage. They were wiping Joe out. All I wanted to do was get out of there, see my psychic. And then I did see him. My psychic. In that lab. Randolph James. The man who brought Joe back to me.
Did he see you?
He didn't look at anyone. He was lining people up to be passed on to the professor.
Why did you sedate Reuben before you killed him, Catherine?
He was happy enough to speak for Joe. I wanted him to know what it felt like to be her.
And Vicky? She was just a young girl doing her job.
She had no belief to take. So I took her life instead.
Catherine's eyes fill with tears and Lewis sadly shakes his head. He slams the car door, nods to a PC, then gets into his own car. At home, Justine is giving a tarot reading for Polly and baby Sarah. She lays out a card featuring a naked woman wrapped in a sash.
The world represents the ending of one cycle of life before the next begins. It teaches us that true happiness lies in giving ourselves back to the world, taking what we've learned and moving forward. But the emphasis is on moving forward. Does that make sense?
Yes. I'm looking for a new house for us two and my brother.
Hathaway is sitting by himself on a wooden bench, puffing on a fag. Lewis joins him and hands him a sandwich wrapped in paper.
Great about your neck, eh?
Yeah, who'd have thought rugby tackling a syringe-wielding murderer would be such good physio?
An inch and a half of form away from certain death. Just think, if you hadn't made it, I might have to go and see a psychic.
Would have been a very one-sided conversation.
You say that now. You'd miss me if you were gone.
Hathaway pulls on the ciggy.
So, you don't think Justine was the real thing? She knew Reuben had been killed before we told her.
It's strange she didn't tell us something we didn't already know.
Strange how the higher powers are so ambivalent, eh?
Hathaway stares blankly into space.
Come on, let's get back.
I don't think I want to.
Lewis gets up to go, but Hathaway doesn't move, still staring dolefully. Lewis sits down again.
I used to feel like that.
What happened?
The next case?
Can we just sit here for a minute?
Of course we can.
Lewis munches on his sandwich, but Hathaway leaves his untouched as he pensively contemplates. They're sitting in front of a rail fence that borders a neatly cut lawn in front of one of the magnificent brownstone Oxford College buildings. ITFC audio description.